Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. This is a special emergency podcast episode. I actually was not planning on doing a show until Sunday night or Monday, doing a full recap of the Summer League games this weekend. As I'm sure many of you know, the Rockets opened play last night in Las Vegas, got a win in their opener. Troy Williams scored 29 points. Joe Chi, his debut out of China, 17-6, team best plus 11 in the plus minus. So lots of good things from your younger Rockets, some candidates to be fringe rotation players this year. And I am still planning on doing an episode either tomorrow or Monday, recapping what we learned from those guys over the weekend. But boy, I know you guys want to talk bigger picture stuff now, because Saturday afternoon, it has been bomb after bomb with your Rockets. The Carmelo Anthony rumors, those have started hot and heavy again, with the Knicks getting Tim Hardaway Jr. from Atlanta. It seems they have a renewed sense of urgency to do a deal. We'll get to that in just a few minutes, but I want to lead off with the deal that, as I record this, just before 5 p.m. on Saturday, the one deal that is done, which is James Harden officially signing a 4-year extension on top of the 2 years he still has remaining on his existing contract. Essentially, James Harden will now get paid $228 million over the next 6 years. He is now under contract with the Rockets until the year 2023. So that takes him all the way to his age 33 year. So basically that means that James Harden's entire prime will be spent with your Houston Rockets, and what a great day it is. I see some folks that are kind of have a little bit of sticker shock focusing on the numbers. And yes, I understand that he's going to be paid $47 million in the last year of that deal. And will he technically be worth it at age 33? I don't know. We'll have to see exactly how he ages and exactly what the salary cap is at that point in time. First and foremost, I really don't feel that down on the deal to begin with, because just like Chris Paul, who is still very much in his prime at age 32, why the Rockets went out and got him in free agency, James Harden is a very cerebral player. He's not dependent on that incredible burst, whatever you want to call it. A lot of his value comes in how smart he is, his overall savvy, and those players typically age a little better than guys who are dependent on explosiveness. So James Harden, to me, has always been a candidate to age more gracefully than a lot of others. The only concern I had was about his usage. The Rockets have asked him to do so much these past few years, especially the last two, when he's honestly been the only superstar on the team, that at some point, even for a guy that's as cerebral as he is, there would be a cumulative wearing down effect. I think we saw a little bit of that in the playoffs this past season. But by virtue of going out and getting Chris Paul, maybe the other top playmaker in the NBA besides James, that I think it's pretty clear that the Rockets are aware of his high usage. They are trying to bring it down a bit, and by virtue of doing that, that should enable him to have a longer prime and stay a dominant player over a longer period of time. So I don't have any concerns about Harden being paid through age 33. Part of it is based on how his game translates. The other part of it is, folks, with Chris Paul and James Harden and now Carmelo Anthony seeming almost on the verge, it's pretty clear the Rockets are all in. Their chips are to the middle of the table. So any of you guys that are worried about exact cap figures, exactly how much room the Rockets are going to have in the 2019 offseason, 2020, anything like that, folks, forget about it. It's pretty clear that with James Harden in his prime, the Rockets are going all in. This is their core. I know Chris Paul is technically only under contract for 1 year, but folks, that's a technicality because he opted in and it made it easier to facilitate a trade before free agency. That allowed the Rockets to put more pieces around him. Bottom line is Chris Paul chose the Rockets. He was going to sign here in free agency if the Clippers didn't trade him there. So you know good and well that barring something extraordinary, like, say, the Dwight Howard Lakers year in 2012, it's basically a foregone conclusion that Chris Paul is going to sign a new contract in Houston next summer. So for the foreseeable future, the Rockets are all in. This is their team. So you folks don't need to worry about cap room because the Rockets are not going to have any. They're going to be above the cap for the foreseeable future. The only acquisitions they can make will either be by trade or by the use of future exceptions, mid-level, biannual, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, that's another reason why the sticker shock doesn't get to me, because when are the Rockets going to need it anyway? There are much bigger picture goals than cap room at this point in time. The Rockets are going after the Warriors, and they have their core. That's why this is such an exciting day. And beyond that, the reason you lock up Harden for 6 years, beyond this, beyond just the obvious of it's a good deal and you're keeping one of the top 10 players in the NBA, look at the message it sends the rest of the league. Make no mistake about it, this is a big part of why the Rockets were able to lure Chris Paul and why Carmelo Anthony is so willing to waive his no-trade clause, something that he's never been willing to do before, to go to Houston. The Rockets have a reputation for treating their stars right, and that matters. Ever since James Harden gave him to Houston, the Rockets have been out in front at every turn. They have not even let him get close to free agency. When he got to Houston, the Rockets gave Harden the full max that Oklahoma City was not willing to give. Before he hit free agency the next time, the Rockets actually took advantage of a little-known clause to renegotiate and extend his contract last summer. That was essentially unheard of at the time. It took a lot of us by complete shock. Even the beat writers close to the team had not reported it as a possibility. And now, essentially, with 2 years left in his existing deal, they're adding four to it. So every opportunity, the Rockets have been out in front, giving him the full max, rewarding him for his play, and that stuff matters. A, it builds a culture. It shows you that, hey, the Rockets, for the foreseeable future, you're going to have one of the top five players in the league, MVP runner-up in two of the last three seasons. You're going to have this guy in his prime. He is locked in, no doubt. That in and of itself is a big thing. But beyond that, it shows Chris Paul, Carmelo, anyone else coming here that, hey, this organization will treat you right. They're not going to pinch pennies. They're not going to just see what happens and see if maybe they need an out. They treat their stars right. That's what Houston has a reputation for under Les Alexander, and this is yet another example of that. So as much as it's about keeping Harden, sure, that's part of it. It's also about extending a message to the league that, hey, the culture is special here. This is where you should want to come if you are another star. And folks, if you want to compete with the likes of the Warriors, it doesn't take one star. It doesn't even take two stars. It takes three or more. So there are very few places that you can go. And so now that you essentially have option one locked up for 6 years, Chris Paul, I know he technically isn't locked up for that long, but in my opinion, that's an inevitability. It's pretty clear that the Rockets are going to be a destination. And no, they're not going to have cap room, but at this point, cap room is only a part of the equation. We've seen over and over again that stars hold a lot of power, and with the Rockets' position as a destination franchise, adding James Harden long-term on top of his ability to lure Chris Paul, apparently close to luring Carmelo Anthony, it sends a statement to the league that the Rockets are all in on culture, stability. I liked one of my Twitter followers mentioned that it was almost like the Spurs model in terms of the stability that they're putting out there to the league. And so I think all of that's a selling point. As much as it's about James Harden, it's also about how you market this franchise to the entire league. And all the way around, I think this was a banner day for your Rockets being able to lock up James Harden through the year 2023. And before I move on to Carmelo, I also want to acknowledge the role that James played in this. There's a certain degree of loyalty and leadership that comes from signing that contract, because by virtue of him doing that, he's able to make a much more convincing sale to the likes of Chris Paul and anyone else that he goes after in the future. This is a league, we know the wandering eyes. It seemed like every free agent, or every free agent to be, if they're not on a dynamite contender where they are, you hear rumors leading up. There are never rumors with James because he's always willing to stay. He understands that's what's best for the team because you can put out the notion of stability. That's a big part of how he was able to lure Chris Paul. And just look at Russell Westbrook, who's able to sign the same deal in Oklahoma City. This is a clause that was put in for James Harden and Russell Westbrook, that new Supermax. Russell can sign that same deal in Oklahoma City. And even after Oklahoma City has added Paul George, he still has not signed it. Now, again, that's totally his right. If he doesn't want to stay in Oklahoma City, or if he just wants to keep his options open, he can certainly do that. That's his right within the collective bargaining agreement. And it's not my place to judge him. What I can say is that James's willingness to put his name on the bottom line, to put that level of trust and commitment in his owner, Les Alexander, his GM, Daryl Morey, and the entire Houston Rockets organization, that puts the Rockets in a better competitive place relative to Westbrook and the Thunder based on what they can do to fill out the remainder of their roster and build a contender around James. So let's give James a lot of credit. Yeah, it's a lot of money, but folks, a lot of players can take money. Russell Westbrook isn't taking that same money. We've seen LeBron, year after year, do the 1+1 deal to take maximum leverage. To sign for 6 years to show that kind of trust in today's NBA, which seems to be becoming more year-on-year, basically, in terms of player movement, it's a big step. It's not a common step, but James did it, and the Rockets are better for it because, well, he's your star, and now he's locked in for the foreseeable future. I know it's crazy to say, but folks, we're just a month removed from when a lot of us, myself included, said that this was going to be a big offseason for James Harden's future in Houston. Because with the bar as high as it is now with the Warriors, if you weren't able to lure a star this offseason, you were going to have to think long and hard about what to do with James Harden. I don't think James had one foot out the door. Actually, we know today that James was recruiting Chris Paul pretty heavily throughout June, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, now of ESPN. But from a Rocket standpoint, if you didn't get that star this year, if you were hanging around just with one star, and that one star was entering 30, and you were going to, of course, inherently increase his workload based on not having the right talent around it, you were going to have to come to some hard decisions in the next year or so in terms of where are we going as a franchise? Are we just stuck on this kind of upper-class mediocrity treadmill? Mediocrity treadmill is too strong because, of course, Rockets had the third best record in the league last year. But with the Warriors as high as it is, you have to say, okay, how are we going to take that next step? And a month ago, it seemed cloudy. Now, of course, we knew they were going to go after Chris Paul and other stars and free agency. We knew it was a possibility. But if it didn't happen, then what do? You're kind of in no man's land when it comes to contention the next few years, and that's the pry with James Harden. Well, now, in less than a month, it's pretty clear. The Rockets, they've got their swagger. They are all in. They lured Chris Paul. They seem to be on the verge of luring Carmelo Anthony, and now James Harden is locked in for 6 more years. So there's no thought about, okay, how do we get there? Is there a point that we need to step back? No, they're all in, and it's still not going to be easy. The Warriors are historically great. But right now, folks, there's at least a path for the Rockets to get there.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Now, the second part of that path, of course, or, well, third, I should say, is Carmelo Anthony. Almost taking Chris Paul for granted. He's just been here a week and a half. But besides luring Chris and locking up James, you want your big three. You want your opportunity to have at least three dynamic playmakers. Now, keep in mind, the Warriors have four. So even if all this plays out, the Rockets would still be, in my opinion, slight underdogs to the Warriors, but it would at least give you an opportunity to where you can at least see a path to where this could work out. And as far as where things stand with Carmelo, there's no deal done as I record this podcast at about 5 p.m. on Saturday afternoon, but it certainly seems like there's a lot of positive momentum heading in the Rockets' direction. Ignoring what we've heard from some of the small Twitter accounts, which hopefully they're right, but I'm not going to put all my trust in people I don't know. I'm just following the big picture, most notably Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN. Based on the Knicks getting Tim Hardaway Jr., there is now a renewed commitment towards trading Carmelo Anthony, mentioned specifically getting a deal done with Houston, did not mention Cleveland. In his latter report on the Harden extension. So the Rockets were turning their full attention to completing a deal for Carmelo. All of these stories, very, very positive. Because, folks, if Cleveland isn't in the picture, I don't know who else would be. Because, of course, Carmelo has no trade clause. That means he can essentially control his destination. And if the Cavs aren't in the mix, and I've said before, it doesn't make sense for the Cavs to give up Kevin Love. And if they don't give up Kevin Love, they don't have the upper hand on Houston. In fact, Houston, you can make a case, might have better assets, and they have a bigger need. So unless Kevin Love is part of the equation, and I don't see why Cleveland would do that. In fact, after Cleveland signed Jeff Green yesterday, I think that makes them even less likely to pursue someone in the Carmelo mold. Then it really seems like the fit is a lot easier for Carmelo in Houston than it is Cleveland. And for Woj to not even mention Cleveland as a potential destination, I think that's pretty telling that they're not really a very realistic option at this point in time. Now, as far as why things have changed, the connection between the Tim Hardaway signing and the Knicks now having a renewed willingness to trade Carmelo. First, if you want to Google Tim Hardaway and Carmelo, please do. You can find out that there were some pretty odd stories about those two in New York. They didn't really seem to get along together in Tim Hardaway's first stint there. But I don't buy that that's really why the Knicks are willing to move their franchise player at this point in time. I think what it's about is it puts a little more emphasis on the here and now for the Knicks. I think the Knicks know that Carmelo is not a part of their long-term future. It's just a matter of when is the best time to make a deal. And if you didn't have Tim Hardaway Jr., you could make the case that maybe the best move is no move, just to hope he opts out next summer and take the windfall of salary cap relief, or to just hold firm on you'll trade him this summer, but only if you can get full cap relief, which in the case of the Rockets, I mean, you got to find a third team to absorb Ryan Anderson's entire salary and basically just give the Knicks the benefit of cap space. Well, now that you have signed Tim Hardaway Jr. for four years, wish it was 4 million, 4 years, $71 million, you're a little more focused on the here and now. Whatever you think about Tim Hardaway Jr., the Knicks are paying him like he's a difference maker. He's young. Kristaps Porzingis, franchise player, he's young. When you have players like that and that level of investment, the here and now matters more. First, just from a strict salary cap perspective, the importance of salary is reduced a little bit because simply now that they have Tim Hardaway's contract. Without Tim Hardaway, as soon as 2019, the Knicks conceivably could have had a lot of salary cap room. Well, now, that's not there. So you could argue that, well, taking Ryan Anderson's $20 million salary, which doesn't expire until 2020, it's not as important now because, well, since the Knicks have Tim Hardaway, they're not positioned to have cap room anyway. So why would you draw a hard line? That in and of itself is a convincing argument. Beyond that, though, I think it opens up so many more options around the league in terms of bringing third teams into the trade. I still am not that ambitious on the Knicks actually taking Ryan themselves. I think, especially with him playing the same position as Porzingis, it's not really the ideal fit, and I think they're nervous about moving him later on if they need to clear cap room. But because they've added Tim Hardaway Jr., and when you invest 4 years, $71 million, you are clearly putting at least some emphasis on the here and now. And who knows? The Eastern Conference is so bad. Could they make a run in the playoff spot? Crazier things have happened. I wouldn't put it past them. But while I don't see them necessarily going after Ryan at this point in time, the scenario I could see is the Knicks taking assets from a third team that are not Ryan but still make a lot of money. That's the difference. Like, for example, Thursday, there's that report that Portland was a potential third team in the Carmelo deal. And they have a lot of larger contracts in that, say, $10 million range. And they might be more willing to take Ryan Anderson because essentially their cap figure, they are capped out for the foreseeable future, so they don't have to be afraid of absorbing Ryan Anderson because they're capped out anyway, whereas some teams are very hesitant to take on that 3 year, $60 million left due to Ryan because, well, what if they're tanking their shot at a big free agent in those future years? Well, there are some teams whose cap figures are so bad that they might take it because he is a quality basketball player and they're not going to have the cap space anyway. And they're not going to give positive assets for Ryan Anderson, I don't think. I don't think you're going to go from Ryan being a perceived negative asset. We've heard some of the leaks about teams wanting the Rockets to throw in one or two first-round picks to move him. I don't think we're going to go to where the Blazers are giving the Knicks tremendous value as in this trade for taking on Ryan Anderson. However, they might move a couple of, say, $10 million-ish contracts. For example, you could put something together with Mo Harkless and Myers Leonard, or you could move Alan Crabb, who essentially has the Ryan Anderson contract but plays a slightly different position that you don't have the overload of power forward like you would with Ryan Anderson and Porzingis. These are just some possibilities, and I don't think Portland's the only team in the equation. But the point is, because the Knicks are not exclusively focused on cap room, because they're willing to invest in Tim Hardaway Jr., that shows you that the Knicks are willing to invest under the right circumstances. Now, Ryan Anderson may not be that circumstance, but it opens up Daryl Morey's possibilities a lot more because he doesn't have to go around the league and say, hey, what do I have to do to get you to take Ryan Anderson for nothing? Instead, he can go around the league and say, hey, is there a deal we can come up with where I trade you Ryan Anderson and you trade me a couple of your existing players? And since it wouldn't be such a net negative on the other team's cap space, then all of a sudden, it's not that Ryan contract is not as prohibitive as when you're just trying to ditch it altogether. And the Knicks, if they're willing to invest in Tim Hardaway Jr., I think that shows a willingness that they're potentially willing to take on contracts at other positions as well. So that's why, in my opinion, the Hardaway deal should make the Knicks a little more likely of a seller to the Rockets in terms of Carmelo, because the Rockets, it's tough for them to offer cap relief. But with the Knicks making an aggressive move for Tim Hardaway, whatever you think of it, it is aggressive, it is an emphasis on the here and now, then it makes a lot more sense for the Knicks to have that same aggression in other transactions. And I think it's pretty clear that whether it's taking Ryan Anderson themselves or moving Ryan to a third team, it's a lot more realistic for the Knicks to take close to $20 million in salary in terms of existing players, be it Ryan or some combination from elsewhere in the league, than it is for the cap space. So that's why the Tim Hardaway deal makes it a lot more likely that the Knicks move Ryan Anderson to the Rockets. And really, as I said from the outset, unless Cleveland is willing to move Kevin Love, I don't see a combination there that's any more attractive. I don't see J.R. Smith and Amon Shumpert being anything that the Knicks jump at. If anything, that's worse, in my opinion, than the Ryan Anderson offer. So that's why the Knicks are more willing to get things done. From the Rockets, if it gets done, it's not done yet, but it seems pretty clear that that's the emphasis. I've had a lot of folks saying, well, is this a good deal? How much of a big three is this? To me, it's a very limited risk. That's why I would do it. You're obviously not giving up a lot. Worst case, you've gotten Ryan Anderson's contracts off the books, and even if it doesn't work out, and say Carmelo uses his player option and goes elsewhere last summer, well, then you've got some salary room to use. By the way, Harden's extension, all these new numbers for James going up to $47 million, it doesn't change the next 2 years. His contract is exactly as it was before for the next 2 years. So in theory, it's unlikely, but if should things go wrong, yeah, the Rockets could use that money elsewhere in July 2018. But I don't think that's the plan. I think the Rockets see it as a good fit. And the reason I think they see it as a good fit is that he can do a lot of the things that Ryan Anderson does while also giving you a lot more potential playmaking and upside. For all the grief that Carmelo Anthony gets about his low shooting percentages, that kind of stuff, it's because he's in a number one role that he shouldn't be in. Now in his 30s, Carmelo should not be the number one on a good team in the NBA, yet that's the role he's been in New York. He takes some inefficient shots. The percentages aren't great. But if you look at his catch-and-shoot percentage when he's open, he profiles very similarly to Ryan Anderson. At the four spot, he is an electric shooter. Really, really good. Now, can he make it all the way out to 27, 28 feet like Ryan can? I don't know. But the bottom line is, they are both really, really good shooters. So I'm not convinced that by adding Carmelo at the four, you're in place of Ryan Anderson, you're necessarily giving up a lot in terms of shooting. Carmelo gives you a lot of that same dimension in terms of a stretch four. The difference, of course, is in the upside, the playmaking, the athleticism. Ryan Anderson, at this point in his career, is a one-trick pony. Earlier in his career, he had the athleticism to be aggressive on the glass, make some things happen in the mid-range game, but I think we've all seen Ryan Anderson as an athlete is not who he was even a couple of years ago. At this point, he's a one-dimensional player, and while that has value over 82 games, especially with the gravitational pull of him being able to shoot to 27-plus feet, in the playoffs against good defenses, which the Thunder and the Spurs were this past year, and certainly the Warriors are if and when the Rockets ever get to a Western Conference Finals with them again, the value of a one-dimensional player has limits. And Ryan, essentially, if you take away that three-point shot, he doesn't have the athleticism to fake the shot, make something happen off the dribble, and defensively, his lateral quickness is so poor that in a lot of matchups, he's just downright unplayable late in close games. That's where you enter Carmelo. Yes, he's a great shooter from behind the arc, but he also has an ability to create. He has an ability to generate his own offense and be a playmaker. In fact, at his best, he's an all-star level playmaker. He's been an all-star 8 times. And if things work out, that potentially gives you 3 players in Chris Paul, James Harden, Carmelo that are in the upper tier of the NBA when it comes to playmaking. Ryan Anderson, he's just not there. He's a nice guy. He's a good system fit. But he just doesn't have that upside. When you're competing with the Golden State Warriors, you have to think about the upside. To me, the risk just isn't that great. I think worst case, even if he doesn't necessarily fit in the system that great, then he still gives you a lot of what Ryan Anderson did in terms of his shooting at the 4 spot, but with more athleticism and a little bit more mobility defensively. That's the worst case. The upside, and what, if it doesn't work out, then he leaves next summer and you can use that cap figure elsewhere. Whereas with Ryan Anderson, he has a ceiling and he's under contract through 2020 at a figure that's hard to move. So to me, even if Carmelo doesn't work out, that's still a better option than the status quo. But if he does work out, yeah, this could be really special. And I see a reason that it could. A lot of folks have pointed out, well, it didn't work out when he was under Mike D'Antoni in New York. Again, that was Carmelo's team when he's the number one. What gets people really excited about Carmelo is that Olympic Melo, that guy when he's option 3 or option 4 as part of essentially a supporting cast around other star players. And you know who he was playing with on those Olympics teams? Guys like Chris Paul and James Harden. So you put him here in Houston with an established hierarchy. You know Chris Paul alongside LeBron is one of the two guys he respects most in the entire NBA. I think it's going to be a lot easier for him to fall in line and accept that number 3 role that he might not have when it was the days of Lynn Stanity at Madison Square Garden with Mike D'Antoni back then. I'm not underselling the role of a coach. Mike D'Antoni is very important. But when it comes to ego, when it comes to buying in from a big picture perspective, knowing exactly what your role is, a coach can never do that alone. That also has to do with the bonds in a locker room. And in New York, that was always Carmelo's team. It was always his franchise. It's been that way since he got there in 2010, folks. In Houston, it's James Harden and to a lesser extent, Chris Paul's franchise. This is not Carmelo's team. He's not going to be the man. And he will be able to look at 2 guys in the locker room who at all times are bigger deals than he is. That's why I think there's a chance this can work out. I think that's a big part of why he's been so good on those Team USA teams, because he has peers around him that he genuinely respects, and it's much easier for him to accept his role. And there's nothing, in my opinion, with the Mike D'Antoni system in and of itself that was a problem for Carmelo, because at his best, yeah, he can shoot and space the floor very well. And at the 4 spot, even defensively, there are lots of matchups where he can be very quality on that end as well, and certainly should be a decent enough rebounder, especially compared to Ryan Anderson. The system was not the problem. The problem was in trying to mesh it within the team concept. And with the Knicks, they were always in this uncomfortable place of committing to Carmelo as their undisputed number 1, and we all know the burdens that come with that. It was his responsibility, yet he also did not have the talent to take them to a championship level. So you always just have this uncomfortable, awkward balance there, and then enter Mike D'Antoni's system, which puts a priority on ball movement and trust. Well, he's supposed to be the guy that the rest of the team trust, and if there's any struggles at all, he puts it on him to bring the team out of it. It just was not the right role for him. And as much as Mike D'Antoni tried to convince him of how to play differently, a coach is never going to be able to do that by himself. It takes a coach, and it also takes bonds within the locker room, the other players on the floor. In my opinion, Chris Paul and James Harden, 2 good friends of his in their primes, stand as good a chance as any to get him to buy into that role. And folks, if he does, the Rockets with Chris Paul, James Harden, and Carmelo Anthony, if they're healthy, could they beat the Warriors? Yeah, they could. Now, I'm not saying they're a favorite, not by any stretch. Warriors are the most talented team in the history of the league. But these are three guys, if they are at their best and if it clicks, that's the only team in the NBA that has three playmakers comparable to the group that they have in Golden State. There's a path there. And by the way, you'd still be surrounding them with the likes of Eric Gordon, Clint Capella. Folks, we're just 2 months removed. Remember Daryl Morey, his press conference after the regular season, or after the postseason, lost San Antonio. And of course, Daryl talked about the need to find more all-star level players. He said that Clint Capella, in his opinion, was a potential all-star player. He's still here. He's going to develop more. Eric Gordon, the first part of last year, the first 40 games, when his usage was low, he was at almost an all-star level of efficiency. Now, I think it dipped as the year went on. I've had a lot of podcasts and columns about that in the past. In my opinion, we know Eric Gordon's physical limitations with his body. I think the deeper we got into the season, it was a role that he hadn't had in a few years, and I think that took a toll on his efficiency. But yeah, now that you've got Chris Paul, James Harden at the guard spots, and potentially Carmelo if he's added as well, then you can keep Eric Gordon in a slightly smaller role, and he might can be that guy he was the first 40 games of last year when he was at an almost all-star level. It's not just a big three. There's plenty of supporting cast members as well that have a lot of upside. So there's a path here where if it works, you can challenge the Warriors. Not saying the Rockets would be favored. They shouldn't. There's a path there. So to me, that's the upside. Is it worth it? Hell yes, if the price is Ryan Anderson. Because if the price is Ryan Anderson, the upside is that. But even the floor, what's the floor of this? Then you have another basically stretch four, a guy who can also shoot threes at a high level, maybe not quite as good as Ryan, but pretty damn close, but has a little more athleticism. And even if he does it by Andrew's role, even if all the good factors, the vibes, the chemistry I just discussed, even if all of that fails and he's all the selfish mellow, the narratives, the memes, all that stuff that have been out there for years, even if all of that is true, then what? He leaves next summer, he has a player option, and the Rockets can use that money elsewhere, as opposed to having Ryan Anderson at $20 million a year through 2020. To me, it's a no-lose scenario. Worst case, he provides a similar impact to Ryan on the floor with a little more upside in a given game, and even if it doesn't work out, you can use that money later. It's really a no-lose proposition. Is it going to hit all the way to where there are three superstars playing at the top of their games, and it's all beautiful at all times? I don't know about that. It's not without risk, but in this case, the downside risk is so small and the upside risk is so great that it's a no-brainer to do this move. And at this point, it's just all of us to refresh Twitter and hope for the best when it comes to finalizing this deal, because with the Knicks landing Tim Hardaway, that puts them in a little bit more of a win-now mindset, less likely to preserve cap room, and the Rockets continue to have that need. Carmelo still has the no-trade clause. There's a lot of little things adding up for there to be a deal with Carmelo to Houston, and it doesn't really benefit anybody to wait on it. The Rockets want to get it done as soon as possible so they can have their core. The Knicks want to move on from Carmelo as soon as possible. I think they'd honestly love to do it before they even introduce Tim Hardaway in a press conference. Both sides don't want this hanging over them, so I would expect a deal to get done fairly soon now that this Tim Hardaway deal is official. Will it happen tonight? Will it happen tomorrow? I don't know. It could. Stay tuned on Twitter. But I think there's a good shot this works out because, folks, there's a reason why Woj, also reported by Mike Wise of ESPN, there's a reason why no one's mentioning Cleveland anymore, and I've said it for days. If Cleveland is unwilling to move Kevin Love, and from a basketball perspective, I don't see why they would do that. They don't have the need that Houston does, and they don't have any better assets than Houston does. There's no reason for them to be considered a serious threat, even if Carmelo is willing to waive his no-trade clause to get there. Because if no Love, there's no real incentive for the Knicks to do that deal. And one final note I'll throw out there, even if Ryan Anderson's value is worse than any of us have thought to this point, by virtue of Harden signing that six-year extension, I absolutely think it makes the Rockets more willing to trade, say, a 2020 or a 2022 first-round draft pick, because they know with Harden being under contract, barring some sort of catastrophic injury, they're never going to be that bad. With Harden in his prime, at a floor, you are a 45 to 50 win playoff team, and of course with Chris Paul and potentially Carmelo Anthony, a hell of a lot more than that. But at a floor with James Harden, you're looking at a mid-tier playoff team. So I think that if the Rockets need any more incentive to potentially toss in a future draft pick as sweetener to get someone to accept Ryan Anderson, then Harden signing that six-year extension can make them bid with the confidence that, hey, that draft pick is not going to be that important because it comes during these next 6 years that James Harden is under contract. So, with that said, I will wrap it there. My voice is about gone. We've had a lot to talk about today, and hopefully we have more. If and when the Carmelo deal gets done, of course, I'll have an immediate reaction then as well. And I know we didn't even talk about the Summer League, but that's by design. Again, either tomorrow night or Monday, I'll have a show wrapping up what we've learned this weekend from the Summer League games. Again, Rockets are back in action tonight, 9 p.m. It's on ESPNU tonight, and then the third game is Monday at 5:30. That's back on NBA TV. Then from there on out, they're going to have at least two more games once it gets into tournament format out in Vegas. The game times and dates will be decided, I believe, either Monday or Tuesday. But bottom line, Rockets have at least four more Summer League games. Don't want to blow any game out of proportion, although it certainly was a good start for Troy Williams and Joe Chi. But we'll talk a little bit more about the Summer League guys once we get more of a sample size, and that'll happen in the days ahead. Again, Rockets back in action tonight, I believe, against Cleveland. Again, it's a 9 p.m. tip on ESPNU. So, with that said, I will wrap it there. As always, appreciate you guys for listening. Again, I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Follow me on Twitter, at Ben Dubose. The show on Twitter, at Locked On Rockets. Also, email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast. Once again, the headlines of the day, James Harden. He has signed his Supermax extension. He is in Houston for six more years through 2023 when he'll be 33 years old. So essentially one of the top five players in the game, MVP runner-up two of the last 3 years, and MVP winner, according to players, in 2015. This guy has committed himself to Houston for the remainder of his prime years. So folks, it's Saturday night. Go out, have some fun on that news, and we seem to have even more good news very, very close behind with Carmelo Anthony becoming more and more likely to head to Houston via trade. So enjoy your weekend, but stay tuned to, well, Woj and everyone else on Twitter. And then as soon as news breaks, I'll have another podcast for you after it's over, breaking down the terms of the deal if and when those transpire. For now, have a good evening.